Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to Secret Artists Podcast. My name's Annie McGrath. What's yours? Don't answer that. You can't. We've got a lovely episode for you this week with a comedian, writer, and portrait artist who I have long admired. It's the brilliant Tom Neenan. Tom is one of the nicest men in comedy, which isn't hard, but is true. He has an excellent podcast of his own, Tom Neenan is Not All Men, which is available to listen to on BBC Sounds, and I highly recommend it. It's very, very funny. Our muse this week is, of course, the Jane Lynch meme from Glee. So if you want to see mine and Tom's interpretations of that, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Secret Art Pod. But for now, enjoy the episode. Tom Neenan is a fantastic actor, writer, and comedian who is the lead writer on BBC Two's hit satirical show, The Mash Report, for which he was nominated for a BAFTA. He was also the lead writer on Quibi's topical comedy show, Hello America. Tom also writes and stars in BBC Radio 4's series, The Hauntening, for which he was nominated for a Writers Guild Award. Tom has his own BBC Sounds podcast, Tom Neenan Is Not All Men, which was described by The Guardian as Alan Partridge-style brilliant. Tom is also an incredible artist, so I'm very excited to have him on the podcast.
Hello, oh my Tom. Goodness. Hello. That was such a lovely intro. That was comprehensive and makes me sound a lot more accomplished than I am in all of those fields. So thank you very much.
Well, you are very accomplished.
God bless you.
I'm always so impressed by your portraits. You do sort of watercolours.
Oh, thank you.
Is that right?
Yeah, so they're kind of what are they? They're like inky watercolor things, and they're sort of, I guess they're more illustration style than anything else.
Yeah.
It's just a nice way of breaking up the lockdown, right? And just sort of using a different bit of your brain to access just some different feelings other than just feeling doom and despair and sort of panic, I guess. It has been really lovely, and you're a keen artist as well, right? This is sort of why this exists.
Yeah. So I love painting. It's a nice break from, as we were discussing, staring at a screen all day.
Yes.
And whilst there's no comedy happening, it's a good time to have a different creative outlet.
100%. And it kind of keeps people, I don't know. I don't think there's much connection necessarily between someone's ability to draw and draw nice things and also be funny, but I think you can tell when like a painting is witty, and you can tell when like someone's got a sense of humor in the way that they draw and stuff. And I think it's a good way of selling yourself, weirdly. People just go, oh, I know that person, they've made me laugh, even if they haven't necessarily made you laugh with something they've said, but maybe it's something they've drawn or like a weird cartoon or something.
That's true. And have you started drawing already?
No, I'm just warming up. Sorry, I'm just doing
warming
a bit
up.
Of
no,
like...
No, I'm into it. I just suddenly felt very behind. But can can you describe our muse for today for the listener? What you've chosen?
Of course, and what a great description. Yes. So I've sort of recently been trying to do stuff which is a bit of pop culture-y and things, sort of images and icons, I guess, that sort of we see every day, and try and sort of do something a bit different with them. And so what I chose today is the Jane Lynch meme. Jane Lynch as the, I don't know the character's name, the sort of sports teacher in Glee.
Yeah.
What is it? She's saying that the actual line is, I'm going to create an environment which is so toxic, which I'm guessing is, a Machiavellian plan. And so I think the first iteration of this was by, because I like going into the you know, the origins of these things, the etymology. And yeah. I think it was Jabuki is the first person to kind of do this, who's sort of very prolific on Twitter. And mm-hmm. he did one. And then people sort of picked up this meme, and now they sort of, they get her to say, basically they sort of, by deleting sections of it, they can basically get her to say whatever they want. And people are having a lot of fun with it. Well, you went viral, right? You had like a tweet that went
I did a tweet about spinach.
Yeah.
That has, you know, formed most of my career. Yeah.
Great.
I said, this is 45 bags of spinach. And then it was a photo of not very much spinach.
Yeah. Well, when you say it like that.
It's embarrassing, like, it's explaining a tweet, isn't it?
But kind of, yeah, it is funny. And it really made me laugh. And like, so did that. I'm guessing, like anything that goes viral, I'm guessing you've had it stolen a few times, have you?
Yeah, had it stolen a few times. Had weirdly had quite a few sort of American personal trainers copy the meme and then crop my name out of it and stick their logos on it.
That's so annoying.
So annoying, but I guess you can't be too precious about it.
Yeah, once you've sort of submitted something to the internet, it can kind of lose its you lose authorship a bit, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. But this is a great meme. Have you decided what you're gonna change the caption? Are you gonna change the caption? Have you decided on what your joke will be, or are you focusing on the portrait?
Well, okay, I'll run this by you. Is this too pretentious, or is this too sort of po-faced in its thing? I was just gonna have her saying, "I am going to create," because it's like art.
I love that. Yeah, that's good. I have got two drafts. One is, I'm going to create a podcast that is so intoxicating.
That's lovely.
And my other option is, crossing out some choice letters, mm-hmm. I'm going to eat an ox. So, a couple of options there.
Yeah, that's, you know, you could almost have her as like a sort of Neolithic person or something, if that's going to be her plan.
That's true.
Be quite nice.
And what materials are you working with? Are you with watercolors today, or are you drawing?
So I am starting off with this, which is a retractable pencil, which gives a very light line. What I'll then do is, using a sort of fine brush and some ink, some Black Star Doctor PH Martin's ink, there it is, I will do like a black outline, and then I, you know, if we have time, we sort of, how long do these usually last? Sort of 5 hours, or what's the...
Yeah, about 3 days, is that okay? No, normally we do it in about an hour, so...
Great, well, I'll see how far I get, and then I'll finish, if this isn't breaking the rules of the podcast horribly, I will finish it, and then there'll be like a finished version that I can present.
It.
Lovely.
I remember you're quite an efficient worker, though. I seem to remember when you did the Greta Thunberg portrait for the exhibition I did last year, it took you about an evening, didn't it? I feel like you smashed them out really quickly.
I try to. I think it's bad, though, because I think part of it is just I lose interest. Like, I have real, like, passion for something, and I'd be like, oh, I can't wait to draw this. And then you'll sort of, if it's not done in a day, I'll be like, oh, well, did I care that much? Which is a terrible, I suppose it's why I like, you know, we both, as part of our jobs, are writers. And so much of writing is like, you can't do it in a day. You sort of have to like spend a day doing nothing in order to spend another day actually writing.
Yeah.
And even then, like, finishing something can take months or weeks or months. So like, I think that's what appeals to me about a bit of drawing, is like, you get to, if it isn't done in an evening, you can almost go, right, moving on. And no one minds, you know, it's
definitely.
Not... So that,
and also because
nice.
Of the nature of the people you choose to portray, they're often sort of people who are in the news that week or whatever. I wondered if your writing on like satirical panel shows and things influences your choice of people to draw and paint.
I suppose part of it as well is like just trying to draw someone and have a view on them who hasn't quite been done yet, you know, hasn't we're not sick of seeing images of them. Because obviously, I'll often go on things like, oh, I say this, does it exist? Have you ever been on the website DeviantArt?
No, I haven't.
Ah, well, that from, I seem to remember when I was sort of a bit younger. Anyway, it might all be defunct now or become a right-wing cesspool. I'm never sure about these things. but from my memory of like things like that, there's a lot of fan art, which I really like. You know, I find that really interesting. But then, you know, there's only so many pictures of, you know, Iron Man or... there we go. Hello.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot, I suppose typical is kind of, yeah, there's a lot of fantasy stuff, a lot of sci-fi stuff. A lot of those images of like half naked wolves that are really ripped.
Yeah. And you love those, famously.
I love them. Oh, yeah. I'm all about the furry life. Yeah. People know that about me. See, a lot. I'm guessing a lot of it now is digital art as well. Yeah. More and more people. What materials are you using, by the way?
I've just started with a classic HB pencil.
Perfect. Can't go wrong.
I'm trying to get the shape of her face and the sort of outline down.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's got quite, great. It's quite a difficult. I mean, it's good in that she's got like very high cheekbones and quite a structured jawline, but her features yes. are quite narrow, aren't they?
They are. She's very, yeah, it's, I'm doing a very long face, I think, at the minute, but that's looking very good. It's what I quite like as well is if you can, which I think you're doing with your image very well, is sort of really capture, you know, the sort of spirit of someone. I watch a lot of Portrait Artist of the Year. That's one of my favourite shows.
Love that. Yeah.
So it's great. And you can just sort of, you can just tell when someone's got the essence of someone in a way. Yeah. And it's very nice. So yeah. So, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, I was saying that, like, it's nice to draw images of, like, things, I guess, that haven't, we're not exhausted of seeing yet. You know, it's, mm-hmm. I kind of, what one thing I've been wanting to do for a while, maybe this will happen, maybe it won't, maybe I'll just sort of put it out into the world and force myself to do it, is a comic book about the IKEA monkey that wore the big coat.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, I quite, you know, you see sort of things where you decontextualize something and then it turns up somewhere else and stuff. I find that kind of stuff really fun.
Yeah. I love it.
I wanted to chat with a producer, a great producer who had this oh my god, someone's done
wait, someone's painted it. Someone's done like
beautiful.
An oil painting of that. I love that one. Wow.
Oh my god. Okay, so this is
okay, we're now looking at a sort of plasticine statue of it.
Yeah.
There's some sort of meme, how do I get out of IKEA?
Nice. See, that's what I love. I love this Murray Crown. Like, people find stuff and then it just goes spirals off in these there he is as Bane.
And do you find drawing a similar process to writing? Oh, are they both, is one of them therapeutic or are they both functional? Are they both work for you, or is one more of a sort of outlet than the other?
I suppose you know, the work is the writing. But yeah. I try and sort of, I guess, if once again, not wanting to sound too pretentious, but sort of look at it slightly holistically in terms of like the lessons that I learn from drawing and the lessons I learn from writing are often quite similar. It's about, like, you know, the way that we've both started is like, well, we know what the subject is of what we want to do. And that's often what you're writing is like, okay, what's the subject? Mm-hmm. And then you're thinking, how do you eke out the details that make it entertaining and, you know, fun to look at? I've been watching a lot of those sort of Netflix Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing about them, because they're all mostly terrible, there's some good ones, is that they're so light on detail. Like, you know, it would just be like an architect working at an architect's practice who moves to a small town or whatever. And it's like, they all seem so generic. And I suppose when you're sort of doing art and stuff like that, you are trying to take something and sort of by enrich it with all the details you can add to it and things that you can spot. And that, I suppose that's sort of similar with writing in a way.
Yeah. I love your podcast, by the way.
Thank you.
That. Yeah.
Likewise.
Thanks. Do people ever think your persona on that is real, or is any part of it real?
I think, I mean, obviously online, people who sort of haven't sort of engaged with it, easily make that mistake. I think, like, I suppose what it is a bit is all the unchecked bits of what, you know, of me in terms of, like, you know, the incurious parts that don't quite engage. And I think you see a lot of that. It's sort of the character I play is someone who sort of wants to get all the praise and everything for being very switched on, but sort of is quite lazy and doesn't want to do any of the reading. Sort of basically wants to keep his own prejudices and everything else, but also gets praised for sort of, you know, being open-minded. And you see that a lot, I think. I think you see a lot of people who, in this instance, it's very much characterized by being sort of a male feminist. But you see it with everything. You see it with, especially with sort of racial issues and stuff like that, where people want, you know, they want to go, I'm so, you know, I'm so switched on. There's a particular word I'm avoiding using, by the way, you may, which is the word woke, because that is okay. Well, it's sort of a word I think that has kind of lost, it's been so stripped of its original meaning and its original intent that yeah. it sort of becomes quite a weird word to use, if that makes yeah. sense. So yeah, but you know,
I
that
thought
kind
you
of
were
going
to say virtue signaling, actually, which I think your character does quite a lot of, sort of making yes. sure the other people know that he's like, yeah. he knows what's right.
Exactly.
I guess woke is probably the other word you'd use, but yeah, yeah, it's very yeah, it's, well done because it is very subtle, but yeah,
oh, cheers.
It's great. It's really funny.
It's weird that people use the word virtue signaling. There it is. There I am.
Oh,
sorry.
This is the iTunes chart. So your podcast is number 49 and mine is number 50.
Oh! So yeah, so like it is. And the people like a lot of stuff, like the term fake news originally was meant to be about right-wing kind of misinformation being spread and got used. Mm. Virtue signaling is a thing. Like, and it is a thing that usually is done by the people who use that phrase the most. It's by people who sort of yeah. use fake Christian or you know, that to back up basically their own prejudices. And so yeah, it's a tough needle to thread that, because obviously there are also people who are like, ah, he's making fun of feminism, and it's like, no, I'm not making fun of feminism. That is, you know, that it's making fun of a particular type of person who wants to get, you know, the credit for feminism, that kind of thing. Yeah, you know. And
does any part of you ever feel like it's not worth doing something that is about this subject matter because of the idiots that are on Twitter and the backlash that you
so
come
far
up
it hasn't been too bad. And like, because I do a lot of work with Nish Kumar, who he's this obscure comedian, and he's trying, God bless him, and you know, if he didn't say things because of idiots on Twitter, he would pretty much never say anything. So he,
that's
you
true.
Know sort of take my inspiration from him to, in terms of going, oh no, you've got to do what you do, and then just, you know, mute yeah. idiots. Like, you know, even something as innocuous as a joke about spinach, mm-hmm. given if anything goes viral enough, you eventually get people going like, no, that isn't that many bags of spinach, you're lying, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Did that happen?
Yeah, it did happen. And then people being like, I don't get this, can you explain the joke? And then, but luckily there was enough other people who had seen it that people would then start explaining it to the other person. It just became yeah. very clear. A lot of people haven't eaten spinach before, so.
They don't know that when you put it in the pan, it'll disappear.
Yeah, it is funny, the lack of irony.
Yeah.
I'm always surprised, but then I'm always surprised as well how funny people are on Twitter. Like, I think it goes both ways, like with this sort of meme, how
yeah.
everyone's a comedian.
Exactly. I know what you mean. This has been one where almost every single one of them has made me laugh, which is so rare. But no, yeah, I know what you mean. I think people always say, oh, people on Twitter are the worst. And actually, they lockdown and stuff like that, people have got so creative. I've been watching a lot of Kieran Hodgson recently did a sort of parody of The Crown that I thought was amazing.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
He's brilliant. He was doing a lot of them for Doctor Who, which I'm a big Doctor Who fan, so I was enjoying them. But we're getting sort of, you know, 50 retweets from diehard Doctor Who fans who understood all the references. And then he does one which is about The Crown, which everyone's watching. And it's like, oh, yeah, everyone sort of gets on board, which is really lovely to see.
Yeah. My favourite one of this meme was someone wrote me playing Monopoly and then it just said, I am an iron. I enjoyed that. It's the simple
amazing.
Ones sometimes.
It really is.
When did you first get into drawing? Is it something you've always been into? Or
I think so, yeah. I think, you know, the two things as a kid, and then you just sort of continue with it a bit. Yeah, I just find it very, like you say, very therapeutic and really, just sort of very relaxing. What about yourself?
Yeah, similarly, I've always done it, like from as long as I can remember. And then I did go to art college for a year before I went to Leeds, and then had a bit of a break from it, have come back to it in the last few years, which has been really good, really nice. Well, like, and
it's weird, isn't it, because obviously when you're getting into we it's worth mentioning that was where we first met, was in Leeds, wasn't it, when
when
or maybe Edinburgh.
Durham.
So that was like when you're doing comedy, obviously chances are you might also have a day job or something. And mm-hmm. so, comedy is the thing you do when you're not working to a certain degree. And then it becomes your job. And then you mm-hmm. desperately want to find something else to do while,
joy's been taken out of...
Exactly. So then you're like, oh, well, I enjoy this thing I used to enjoy doing. I could, pick that back up.
That's true. And have you always focused on portraits, or have you ever done anything else with art?
I tend to do mainly sort of portrait stuff. I'd love to get better at, I'm very jealous, like I say, of like comic books and things. One thing I'd love to get good at is sort of very the architectural kind of drawings. When you see in comic books when like they just draw really tall buildings or like really stunning looking architecture and stuff like that. I'm always like, oh, that looks so stunning. And I guess that's, it's slightly a different skill set. I've moved on now. I'm now inking in.
Lovely. You've got such a unique style. Have you is that the way you've always painted, or have you taught yourself to do this sort of, I don't know how I would describe it. It's quite delicate, but it's also quite caricature-y.
Yeah, thank you. The trouble is, there's one artist who I adore, who is Chris Riddell, who's an illustrator. Mm-hmm. And I'm still kind of, I still very much, which is in his shadow stylistically, I think. So he's someone I'd like to, I think he's brilliant. But every time I draw, I see obviously his influence everywhere. And I'd eventually like to kind of, I don't know, move out of that a bit. I suppose if, thank you very much. It's nice to sort of have a style. I feel like I see his style in there more than I sort of see an individual style of my own. Hence, I kind of have never gone, I'll sort of branch out and maybe try and make some money from drawing and stuff, because I sort of think, well, I know that there's an illustrator out there who's sort of like me but 50 times better, and you just get them to do it. So that's kind of the
but if everyone thought like that, there would be no art.
Well, that is true. That is very true. And maybe actually, that there are bits of my style and that are creeping in that I don't notice. But when you it's similar with comedy, right? Like you start off and there are like five or six people maybe that you sort of either grew up watching or watched a bit later, and you're like, oh my goodness, they are mm-hmm. everything I want to do. And then as you develop, you're like, you find your own style and the things that you like doing.
Definitely. Did you say it's called Chris Riddell, that illustrator?
Yes, R-I-D-D-E-L-L. He does a lot of like children's book illustrations. I think he was the children's laureate for... so you see he's got that kind of caricature-y style.
Yeah, they're really nice. Mm. Does he use watercolour and ink as well?
He's very prolific. So he will do, you see him, he'll like do a live video where he'll just have like a biro or something, and he'll just, because he's so skilled, he can just turn that into into something beautiful. But
well, that's cool. Can you see, wait, it looks like he's part of the drawing.
Yeah, that's lovely, isn't it? That is a creature. I can't remember what the book is from now, but yeah, that's like a sort of bear-like creature, and it's that's the great thing, is it's incredibly detailed, but that drawing must be about 8 foot tall. That's really awesome. Yeah, I love that.
Do you have any art in your house?
I do like cartoons. We recently bought an original Inspector Gadget frame from like a comic strip from that, which I really like. And obviously, because I find comic, there we go, there he is. I do like a bit of original art, but obviously it's incredibly expensive. Whereas, the more disposable, supposedly, the medium, the cheaper it becomes. So you can get like an original cell from one of the, one of these things for maybe like £80, which is expensive, but, obviously cheaper than a painting. What about yourself?
I do have a couple of small paintings that were done. Actually, one was given to me by a charity called Kursler Arts, who they run an award scheme of art in prisons. So prison, then you can apply to be part of this award scheme, and they do an exhibition each year at the South Bank Centre. But I've got a little postcard done by someone in prison that's sort of like a landscape with a nice sunset.
That's incredible.
And then I've got a couple of prints that I've bought from friends and stuff. But
lovely.
Not an extensive collection as yet. My comedy career is not going well enough for that.
Well, it's, I mean, yeah, I mean, who has, you know, the money for, original artwork is just so expensive, isn't it? So that, yeah, like I stick very much to sort of cartoony stuff because people, I love it and it's, you know, I really enjoy it, but it does go for a bit cheaper. Yeah. That's such a great idea, like art in prison. It's, you know, it's one of the, there's nothing really, if you've got the materials, it's something that I guess you can do and sort of properly develop a style and everything else, though you're sort of incarcerated. That's awesome.
And I think because they're often very limited with materials, you do get quite exciting stuff. Like there was a piece made from coffee that I saw last year, and everyone gets like so creative because obviously they don't have access to loads of different materials. So force you to be more adventurous, I guess.
That's awesome. And also, like, anything that gets people to, you know, express themselves, and it's you know, it can act as a bit of therapy as well. It's sort of therapy by stealth, which I really like.
And if money wasn't an object, is there an artwork you would have in your house?
Ooh.
If you could have anything in the world?
I don't know. Some of my favourite art is stuff that I wouldn't... Art you have in your home, I guess, and art that you sort of love, they can be a bit different.
That's so, true, yeah.
Like, I love Goya, his sort of drawings and paintings, but, like, I think it would be a bit too... like, Saturn devouring his son in your front room might be a bit too much. So, this is probably very un-PC, so I apologise in advance. But I quite
We'll just
like...
say it's a character.
Exactly. That's what I always do. I just shroud it in irony and I'll get away with it. I quite like taxidermy.
I quite like taxidermy.
Yeah, like antique taxidermy. So like, I wouldn't want anything to be killed for me, like go out and kill a rhino or something so I can have it more. But like, you know, I will occasionally go around sort of fairs and things and see a bit of taxidermy. I'm lucky enough to have a little, a bell jar with some birds in it. And, you know, I can sort of, hopefully, I'm not sure what the where they came from, but I hope it wasn't anything too sinister. But
follow that account Crap Taxidermy on Twitter?
Oh no,
it's
is that
really good?
Is it self-explanatory? I mean,
it's exactly what you'd expect. like that. Can you see that bear in the garden? Quite horrific.
Yeah. Oh, these poor things. Well, one of my favourite museums has a very famous example of bad taxidermy, which is the Horniman Museum, which is near where I live in Forest Hill. That's in Forest Hill. Yeah. I sort of live in South London. And that has a walrus there, which was stuffed. There you are. There it is. Before they knew that sort of walruses were meant to be about half the size and covered in wrinkles. So what they did is they just stuffed it full. So so it's this big sort of bloated walrus that they've got right in the centre there. And it's sort of, In its own way, that
it's
is its own sort of
though.
Terrible.
Surely they could just say it's abstract.
Yeah, we'll go with that. I'm sort of surrounded by people, those, because I live near Crystal Palace as well. And Crystal Palace has the, it's not taxidermy, but the dinosaurs. Mm. And obviously, they're kind of, they're famously so inaccurate because they were made in like the Victorian times when they didn't really know how the bones went together.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Do you ever draw from life, or do you always work from images?
I'd love to do more from life, but part of me just feels guilty that people are sitting still for that long. When, you know, it's a lot to ask of people. I do, what I try and do is if I am, you know, drawing from images, I try and get quite a few, because sometimes you can get an image of someone and actually it doesn't, you know, it can just be from a weird angle or it can be a weird bit of lighting. And suddenly it doesn't look like them. It looks like someone else. So it's always good to have a variety of different reference photos and things like that, to, if you want to sort of properly get someone. Because I think, once again, being kind of a Doctor Who fan, I remember when they used to do the VHS covers of Doctor Who, and they used to sort of do these amazing illustrations. But often the illustrators hadn't actually seen any of the episodes and had only been given like two reference photos. And so they'd sort of do this version of what they thought the characters looked like or what the actors looked like, and it would be baffling. So it's kind of avoiding that, I guess, which is the only thing.
Definitely. And do you ever create images just purely from your imagination, or do you always draw real people, real characters?
I'd love to be better at doing stuff from imagination. I'd love to just sort of be able to start a drawing and not know where it's going. But at the minute, I feel a bit sort of tied, I guess, to images and stuff. Mm-hmm. What about you? Do you try and sort of...
I'm quite bad at doing painting from my imagination. I do want to get better at it. I generally work from images. Or if I don't, I have to start really abstract and just, I'll just paint and use like different brush strokes and see. Sometimes I can see like from just painting, an image will not appear, but like it will start to look like something. Like I recently was just playing around with some paint, and then it started looking a bit like a whale. So I sort of added a silhouette of a whale to it. But often, I'll tend to work from images first rather than. But similar to you, I want to get better at just working, you know, from my head and getting, you know, trying to be a bit looser. But
yeah, I'd love that. Just, and you know, that a bit more, you know, I'm not a great doodler. I'd love to be able to just sort of sit there and just sort of work away at something.
Yeah.
So I'm doing her little flicks now. She's got like a feathered hair. Oh, is that yours? That's amazing. Oh, I love it.
That's the whale. So yeah, I started by, I basically actually just spilt a load of yellow paint on the palette. And I never really use yellow, but I painted the whole canvas yellow. Just I had to get rid of the paint. And then when it dried, I hated the colour so much. I just rolled loads of blue over it. And it started sort of looking like an underwater scene.
And you can see, so like, that's really nice because it gives it a luminescence, because you can see the yellow coming through there, which almost sort of indicates like a sort of sunlight or something breaking through sort of a, you know, the depths. That's really nice.
Yeah, sometimes it can work, but you know, sometimes it's shit.
That's art. Yeah.
That's the joy of what we do.
Have people used, what's the sort of strangest medium people have used on this? Because we're sort of being quite, you know, pencils and inks are quite sort of traditional. Has anyone sort of done any plasticine or any?
Actually, in the first episode, one of the first ones we ever did, I was with Katie Wicks and she chose for us to use modelling clay. And,
nice.
That was fun. Yeah, we did a sort of sculpture. And then recently, the most strange medium, I would say, was with an actor called Eleanor Matsura, and we did our own candle magic.
What?
Don't know if you know what that is.
No.
I'm not sure that I know what it is. It's something that she does. It's candle dressing, where it's all very spiritual and you sort of express yourself using the candle and put your wishes down and your aims and your ambitions, and then you make the candle look all pretty. And
that's cool.
Probably the least traditional.
Yeah. I like thing. Stuff like that. That is, I'm guessing, but you know, part of the candle thing is that also it's not permanent. That you sort of make something beautiful like a candle, but the whole point of a candle is to be used burned, and to be burned. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it I suppose it has like a quality a bit meditative as well. Like when you do a what are those gardens called where they kind of rake the gardens and then sort of destroy the pattern that's been made. It's kind of art that you make and then just go, yeah, but it's gone now, because everything I always find that quite liberating.
Yeah, well, it's similar with comedy, isn't it? Well, with live comedy anyway. It's there until you stop performing it, and then it's just in the audience's memory.
Yes, I for one have been slightly reticent to ever record any of my shows. Just
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that, like you say, they kind of exist for an audience at a time. Mm. And unless you can, I don't know, I think it can, you slightly need to change them if you want, personally, that's my opinion, to sort of change them to do that. Like, you know, there's been some really good ones. You know, James Acaster's shows were recorded very well, and they're a really good testament to what those shows were. Mm. You know, I think you've just got to make sure that what you're getting down is how, you know, how you want it to be represented and everything. It can be quite tricky. Have you ever recorded a show?
We did film our twins show for Next Up, you know, the online.
Oh, yeah, yeah, fantastic.
Comedy platform. So we did have to, you know, change. Well, we kept the sort of narrative of the show. That was a sketch show, but we made it probably better visually for the audience.
Great.
At home and did different things, like we had a GoPro.
Oh, nice.
Stuart did this. This was Turtle Canyon producing it. But uh-huh. So there was like more interesting camera angles and stuff. So it wasn't just like, you know, a recording of a live show, which I think, as you say, can be not as interesting.
Yeah, like I wonder if people, I was lucky enough because I'm a part of the liberal media elite, to see Hamilton live. But I wonder if people who saw Hamilton just when it came out on, say, Disney Plus, whether they would think it was as good, because obviously that is a huge amount. It's just the energy and the, you know, that the performer's giving that obviously sometimes is lost when it's not live. So I wonder if people who like heard, oh, I've heard this Hamilton thing's good, I'll watch it on Disney Plus, and then saw it and were like, it's all right.
I haven't seen it yet, actually. I think I would definitely want to see it live if I could, or if I had the chance.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Obviously, with these times, it's like the only way you can see live performances usually via like a recording or something, which is a real shame. But
And doesn't really appeal to me at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've just really messed up her lips. I had them, but I'm now like overdrawing it. Do you ever do that?
Yeah, 100%. Usually I find I'm just better off trying to stick with the original drawing I did, because then you get in your own head and you start sort of. So this doesn't, my drawing I think is like a quite a good drawing, but maybe doesn't look exactly like her. But I've just tried to go for like something just so I don't shame myself on your art podcast by not creating something at all. You know, I could easily spend an hour and then just have nothing and have rubbed it all out.
I would have quite a lot of respect for you for the, the first person to produce nothing.
Yeah. In a sense, isn't that the most artistic thing of all?
Yeah, exactly. It's a statement about the nature of the art world during a pandemic.
Definitely. But it's been, I've certainly kind of been very grateful sort of to have some time to do, you know, to spend on these doing drawings and stuff. It is a real luxury, and I'm very aware that it's a luxurious thing. Even, you know, from friends of mine who have kids and stuff who just never get the opportunity to them. Do this themselves, so I feel very very lucky.
Definitely. Have you had any sort of commissions for your work? Do you ever sell any of your drawings?
No. I did a few where I think I put a few on I can't remember the name of the website, but they sort of do prints and stuff, and all of the stuff in there I gave to any of the tiny profits I made from that I gave to charity, because I sort of this isn't how I earn money. So I sort of sometimes feel a bit guilty about, you know, charging anyone. But with that, it was a way of just making some drawings available.
Yeah.
Where I wasn't out of pocket and people hopefully were getting a good deal. So that was nice. But I've never actually been commissioned. Have you done any sort of paintings and stuff to order?
I have. I've done a few. It's a different discipline though when you're doing commissions, because you obviously have to follow a brief, and sometimes it's very easy if people give you a very clear or if they know your work very well, they'll sort of give you more freedom, which can be nice. But it's definitely a different process to just, you know, pouring yellow paint and thinking it's a whale.
It's a whale,
it's
eventually
a whale. Isn't that what you wanted?
It's a bit, you know, it's slightly similar with like some of the writing I do, where you know, half the time I am being hired because people like the way that I write and they want that. And then sometimes they are like, we have this talent who we think that you would work well with, you know, on screen talent. Could you sort of slightly recreate their voice? So it's sort of two different jobs a lot when I'm sort of writing it. It's trying to hone my own voice, but then also trying to tap into other people's as well.
Yeah, it's a difficult discipline, especially with comedy, because I think you're taught initially to, you know, write what you know, write what you think is funny. And then if you're employed and it's not necessarily someone who you would share a sense of humour with, but you're writing for them, it can become a totally different... It's just a different writing exercise, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, you know, you what you don't want to do is sort of early on realise that, oh my God, we do not share a, you know, me and this person do not share a worldview, or we do not share a sense of humour. Whereas like, I've been fortunate enough, you know, I've done a lot of working with Nish, and obviously we're very similar. We actually met, you know, when we were about 17, because we were both debaters. So so we've sort of known each other for a long time, and you know, while I am writing in his voice, his the way that he and I think and sort of process stuff is different enough that I'm useful, but also not different enough that I'm sort of coming at things from a completely, you know, wrong point of view or whatever.
Well, also you were in a double act together, so you must know,
of course,
the intricacies of how each other thinks and writes.
How we all work. Exactly. Yeah, so that's been kind of... it's helpful to do that. If only all the people I wrote with, I could have like a decade of experience knowing them and before I had to write jokes for them. That'd be extremely handy. Are you drawing her sort of...
I've really fucked her collar. Up, actually. I have done her collar, because I wanted to give her, you know, some context. Otherwise, she was just a bit of a floating head.
Fair enough.
So I've given her some shoulders and a collar.
Lovely.
But I haven't done much of the back. You've been doing the background, haven't you? Have you got?
I haven't yet. I will do. I'll ink that in later. At the minute, I've just been sort of inking in her the sort of pencil drawing at the minute.
Lovely. And is what you do art?
No. I've always suspected that my style and my stuff is a bit too literal. Like, I'm drawing a picture of Jane Lynch, and what that means is it's Jane Lynch. Like, it's I think that to a certain degree, and I'm trying to get better with my writing about this as well, it's like I'm guessing a lot of my drawings aren't subtextual. Whereas like some people, you know, they'll draw something and then they'll tell you what it actually means and it'll give it a whole new dimension. Whereas I think a lot of what I end up doing is is very plainly representative. So I don't think it's
So do you think art can't be purely representative?
Good point. I suppose it can. And maybe it's quite exclusive to say that it can't. I'd say that specifically what I do doesn't count. But no, you're right, actually. I think you can you can have stuff that's purely, and it can be extremely artful. Like, I suppose, talk about Goya again, like when he was, he was doing sort of pencil drawings in, was it the Spanish Civil War? Oh, God.
Yeah.
Like, that is, at the same time, just plainly sort of observing from life and drawing, but in a very literal way. But you wouldn't deny that that is, has artistic, has merit as pure art as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Good answer. Oil or watercolour?
Watercolour.
Romanticism or contemporary?
Ooh, I like a bit of romanticism, please.
Portrait or landscape?
I'm going to go for portrait.
Rembrandt or Banksy?
It's Rembrandt.
Men or not all men?
Not all men.
Vaudeville theatre or sketch comedy?
Ooh, sketch comedy.
Can you separate the art from the artist?
Oh, that's a big one. That's not a yes or no. That's a can you separate the art from the artist? Yes.
It is a big question for a quickfire round.
It is. I am literally saying, can you separate the art from the artist? And I thought, well, less than a year ago, I was in LA and I went to Harry Potter world. So I sort of, that was me separating the art from the artist slightly.
Tortured artist or rational Edwardian ghost?
Yeah, rational Edwardian ghost.
Talk about or think about art?
Talk about.
Looking at the painting close up or far away?
First close up and then far away.
Nice.
Mm.
London or Durham?
London. Feel guilty, but it has to be, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
Private view or view of privates?
View of privates. It's less exclusive. Private view sounds very,
snobby.
Yeah, snobby, exactly.
Painting from life, landscape, or still life?
Life.
Art or tech?
Art.
Art or books?
Ooh, art.
Art or food?
Food, has to be.
Yeah, dicks or pussies?
Interesting. I feel like if Georgia O'Keeffe has really sort of, done great stuff for the artistic depiction of the pussy, whereas maybe the dick isn't as... Was that the question? Is it just what do I prefer in terms of art?
I love just that as a quote. George has done wonderful things for the depiction of the pussy.
Yeah. So, like, I always feel like the phallus is sort of represented a lot in sort of a lot of warriors, you know, and things like that. Statues of kind of warriors will have massive phalluses, and it's all to do with kind of aggression. Whereas, wouldn't it be lovely to see an artist sort of do these really tender, sort of sympathetic illustrations of penises?
Although they did used to, I think Roman sculptures did used to do very small penises because that was a sign of wealth or something.
Yes, yeah. So that's like, say, like David, famously, Michelangelo's David has like,
yeah,
and big balls. They really liked.
Googled Roman sculpture penis. Sorry. Yeah, ancient Romans. Oh, sorry. Ancient Romans went towards large, but the Greeks had small penises.
Oh, there you go.
As in depicted small.
Yeah.
Because powerful men, they thought, had small, flaccid.
Yeah. Fair enough. I wonder if that'll, like, you know, obviously we are going a minute from. It was very popular at one point, you know, to be super skinny. Like, it felt like the 90s, mm-hmm. and like Kate Moss, it was all very... And now, obviously, Kim Kardashian, we're seeing that the preferences of body shapes and sort of body attributes change.
Yeah, that's true.
I wonder what we'll be looking at in, like, 50 years' time. Here we go. Should we show each other's sort of now? Great.
Oh, I love it.
That's very cool. I really like yours.
I love how you managed to just, like, do the outline, but it's still so detailed and the expression is so perfect. Like, the eyebrows and the heavy eyelids are amazing. It's good.
Yours looks so good. So it's painted ink on there. What I'm doing is, because Zoom reverses the image, I'm looking at it going, it looks quite weird. But then, of course, it's sort of, I guess it's the reversed image that I'm looking at. So I need to...
It's great. I'm going to give you 10 out of 10 for commitment and technique. It's brilliant. And I'm really excited. So you're going to ink it. You're going to colour it in, aren't you?
Yes, I'll colour that in and give her a little thing. I love yours as well. I think it's nice. Can I see a bit closer? It's really good. I love the... So have you, with your like shading and stuff, is it just like very light cross-hatching that you're doing?
Yeah, some cross-hatching and... some rubbing out when I fucked it up. drawing on top of it. I think that's the technical word.
Yeah. I love it. I don't want to reduce it to a numerical rating. I'll just give it a I am going to create a beautiful piece of art. I think that looks so good.
What a fun thing to draw.
I'm
gonna write my text on top of it.
Fair enough.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Thank you. This was a wonderful way of spending an afternoon. Thank you so much.
What a lovely episode. What a lovely podcast, if I may say so myself. Remember to check out Tom's podcast, Tom Neenan Is Not All Men. He's on Twitter @TNeenan and on Instagram @TPNeenan. Snuck a little P in there for Instagram. I am... what am I?
No, that's too big a question for the outro. I'm on Twitter at Annie McTweet. I'm on Instagram at McGrath.Annie and at McGrath.Art for my art. I've got a website where I'm selling original paintings, prints and Christmas cards. amcgrath.art if you want to buy something for a loved one or a hated one. If you want to research anything or anyone we've spoken about, off the top of my head, we spoke about Chris Riddell. We spoke about Goya. Heard of him? I think he's on Twitter. We spoke about Kursler Arts, who do brilliant work encouraging prisoners, secure patients and detainees to participate in the art. So follow them and their brilliant work. And until next time, have a lovely week. Look after yourselves. And thank you so much for listening. Remember to check out mine and Tom's artworks on at Secret Art Pod on social media. Oh, I sounded like I'd signed off and then I added another little bit. Anyway, review, rate, subscribe. Goodbye. No, you hang up.
Secret Artists is a Turtle Canyon comedy production for Acast. Music by Alistair Clayton. Quickfire Round music by Steve Dunn.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.